Hello and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and World Perspective. I'm Diana Isaac. I am joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini. We are together in person. And we have a very special guest. We have Dr. Vaidyanathan, and we're going to be talking about tons of things related to heart failure today and new therapies trials that have come out. So, is it okay if I call you Muthu? I think that's going to be easier. Or you tell us what you want to be called, but if you don't mind introducing yourself to our audience that don't know you.
Yep, a little background where you are, what your clinical practice looks like, what your research practice looks like. We'd love to know.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me. Muthu Vaidyanathan, and Muthu is perfect. I am a cardiologist at Brigham and Women's Hospital and a clinical trialist here. I focus predominantly in heart failure and related cardio-kidney metabolic conditions. And then I spend another component of my research portfolio on implementation science and trying to find best approaches to get therapies to patients.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on with us today. I really, really appreciate your expertise. And the first thing we want to talk about is the release of the top line results of Summit with tirzepatide, so brand name Mounjaro or Zepbound. And I know my understanding that was done with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. So just curious on your interpretation of this trial. Or I guess the top line results, since we don't have the full trial published yet.
Yeah, so Summit is a very exciting trial. It follows on the heels of two paired trials, the STEP-HFpEF trials in both diabetes and non-diabetes populations. And now will represent a third positive trial with an incretin-based therapy for obesity-related HFpEF. And so just a quick summary of the trial itself, or at least what is publicly available. This was a global trial conducted across 10 countries of 731 patients who were randomized to 1-to-1 to maximally tolerated tirzepatide versus matching placebo and were titrated to 5, 10, or 15 milligrams of tirzepatide. All participants who were enrolled had obesity and heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, and patients were followed over time. The primary endpoint was actually adapted during the course of the trial. Initially, the trial focused on a hierarchical composite endpoint that was inclusive of death, worsening heart failure events, 6-minute walk distance, and KCCQ-based endpoint. However, the investigators, I thought fairly cleverly, adapted the primary endpoint to one that was perhaps more meaningful and interpretable, and that was a more traditional co-primary endpoint that was inclusive of cardiovascular death or worsening heart failure as one of the primary endpoints. And the second was a change in the Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire clinical summary score. The first endpoint was assessed over a median of 2 years, whereas the patient-reported outcome, KCCQ endpoint, was assessed over 1 year. And we learned about the top-line results that were positive. Happy to review those and my interpretation of what was shared. But I'll pause in case there was any questions about just the design elements of this trial.
Well, I'm a little curious how this, of course, we know that semaglutide was recently studied for this indication. And just kind of curious your thoughts on the trials. Are they similar or the trial design a lot different?
Yeah, in my view of the patient populations themselves are that they're fairly similar. This was targeting a unique subpopulation of patients with HFpEF that presumably obesity was the primary driver of disease progression in these patients and was a predominant comorbidity in these individuals. And of course, it's difficult to draw indirectly compare two different trials. However, at least based on what's publicly available, these trials were fairly similarly conducted in a rigorous manner, globally conducted, including in countries where obesity-related HFpEF is quite prevalent. So we learned about the top-line results of the SUMMIT trial, which was very exciting in that it met not only both co-primary endpoints, but also met all of its pre-specified secondary endpoints. So the co-primary endpoints had large magnitude effect sizes. It was reported that there was a 32% reduction in the first primary co-primary endpoint of cardiovascular death or worsening heart failure. And then the KCCQ clinical summary score was similarly improved by almost magnitude of 8 to 10 points between arm difference. So both of these are not only statistically significant to a large degree, but also clinically meaningful in terms of magnitude of effect sizes. Each of the secondary endpoints were also met. That included a 6-minute walk distance change, included a CRP reduction, and a body weight reduction. Overall, it appeared that there was about a 12 to 13% body weight reduction with this maximally tolerated 5, 10, or 15 milligram tirzepatide dosing in this trial. I think some caveats in the interpretation. I think overall it's a positive finding. It's certainly a step forward in incretin-based therapies in obesity-related HFpEF. Some of the caveats, this was a modest-sized trial. This was about 700 patients compared with our traditional outcomes trials in HFpEF today, which are closer to 6,000 patients. So a magnitude of size that's lower. So because of that, it included measures and outcomes that perhaps are less typical, and that included other measures of worsening heart failure beyond, for instance, a hospitalization for heart failure. It took other components that may signal worsening of heart failure, such as a intensification of an oral loop diuretic. And they counted those as primary events. And so I think as a community, we'll need to understand what proportion of total primary events were driven by this perhaps less clinically meaningful component of just diuretic changes compared with some of the harder endpoints such as cardiovascular death and heart failure hospitalization. The KCCQ endpoint was markedly improved, and I think it's on a similar magnitude of what we saw with STEP-HFpEF paired trials. And so I think in that case, I think that lends certainty to our evidence base there that the three trials of incretin therapies all yielded fairly robust weight changes and clinically important health status benefits.
So thank you for that summary. That was so helpful. I think our listeners will especially appreciate that. I'm curious, based on this trial, do you think that it should aim that patients that have
specifically because the numbers were lower? And yeah, but the data looks great, but are the numbers high enough that we could actually expect or hope for another GLP-1 that does? This is amazing. In the study.
Yeah, we're in a very unique time in which these therapies, I think, are moving into uncharted territories and with respect to regulatory decision-making. There are several unique aspects. First of all, they studied a unique endpoint that was inclusive of oral diuretic intensification. The FDA previously hasn't handled this endpoint for a heart failure therapy. So that will be an open question. The second issue is that unlike some of the other therapeutics in cardio-kidney metabolism, the evidence base for GLP-1 receptor agonists and other incretin-based therapies have all come very rapidly and very quickly and covered large populations that have overlapping disease states. For instance, the large-scale obesity cardiovascular outcomes trials also enrolled a large population of patients with clinical heart failure. And so might we be able to borrow some of the evidence from some of these adjacent trials to substantiate a claim. I think that at the present time, I feel fairly comfortable that these data are sufficient to support a health status benefit, meaning quality of life benefit. And whether the FDA or guidelines offer a specific guidance for use for improvement in quality of life in people with obesity-related HFpEF is yet to be seen. It's also meaningful that the cardiovascular outcomes trials are going to encompass many of the populations that are going to be treated here. So for instance, when we take data from SELECT, which was overwhelmingly positive as well, we include in our clinical decision-making those 4,000 patients in SELECT that had clinical heart failure at baseline. And so in that sense, when we're treating a patient in front of us with clinically meaningful obesity, I think this is certainly helpful to as another data point to share with patients that you may in fact feel better, your diuretics may need to be intensified to a lower degree, you may stay out of the hospital or stay out of urgent heart failure clinical visits, but at the end of the day, you may be using this as for a broad cardio-kidney metabolic purpose because you're achieving several treatment goals at the same time.
So I'm just curious, do you think if someone's trying to decide, like in terms of heart failure therapy, would want to go with an SGLT or a GLP receptor agonist? How should I decide?
And it might be both of these therapies that are going to
right.
In many patients. I think SGLT2 inhibitors now have a foundational evidence base in which they've now been studied in dedicated outcomes trials of sufficient duration of time that have and have been well studied across disease populations that we really understand the safety profile, the practicalities of their use, and the nuances in clinical decision making that go into their integration in patients with heart failure with preserved EF. The GLP-1 receptor agonists have to date been largely studied in patient populations of overweight and obesity. And so really we're going to be considering them in a subset of the overall population. In certain countries like the United States, that proportion is much larger in terms of the overall HFpEF population. But globally, obesity-related HFpEF may be one of the drivers of HFpEF, but there may be several other phenotypes and mechanistic drivers. So I think at the end of the day, many people may require both of these therapies. We have definitive evidence that SGLT2 inhibitors improve morbidity and mortality outcomes. We have, I think, a fairly strong evidence base now that GLP-1 receptor agonist in this target subset improves health status. And now we've seen that in three modest-sized randomized clinical trials with similar effect sizes, so it adds to the certainty of those claims. For many patients, they do have really residual signs and symptoms of heart failure and adverse health status despite SGLT2 inhibitors. So I think in those patients, clearly there's a role for the addition of a GLP-1 receptor agonist.
Awesome. Well, thanks for explaining all of that.
Yeah.
I do also have a question about, we understand that the top line results are also with the fine arts trial with Panarin. And
which is also really exciting. Almost a days within each other, right away on top of each other again. Talk a little bit about that, about the fine arts study and that design.
Yeah, incredible time in heart failure preserved EF. It feels like yesterday we were talking that this therapeutic space was the graveyard of therapies, and where therapies that have won in other areas like heart failure with reduced EF or chronic kidney disease or type 2 diabetes just didn't seem to work in patients with heart failure preserved EF. But today, now we have many potential therapeutic options that can slow disease progression. Fine arts heart failure was a large-scale global trial of 6,001 participants in which the same target population here, but a broader population of heart failure with mildly reduced or preserved ejection fraction, EF, greater than or equal to 40% with symptomatic heart failure. These patients were randomized 1:1 to finerenone, which is a novel non-steroidal mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, compared with matching placebo. Patients could be titrated to 20 or 40 milligrams of finerenone, were followed for an median treatment period of about 2.6 years, with a primary endpoint of total heart failure events that included hospitalizations or urgent heart failure visits and cardiovascular death. The top line results are that it met its primary endpoint and provided definitive evidence of benefit in this target population. We'll be sharing the full results of the Fine Arts trial at the upcoming ESC Congress on September 1st in a dedicated hotline session. We'll be accompanying that data with a broader perspective of the trial evidence in this space. We'll be including a meta-analysis that's individual level, participant level data from the four large-scale MRA trials in heart failure. That includes RALS, Emphasis Heart Failure. Those are the two reduced EF trials. And then TOPCAT and Fine Arts, which are the two preserved EF trials. So that will be an integrated meta-analysis, really summarizing the totality of evidence of MRAs in heart failure. We'll also be sharing the totality of evidence of finerenone in all completed phase three trials, inclusive of Fine Arts heart failure, but then with adjacent data from the two CKD trials, Fidelio DKD and Figaro DKD. So we're really excited about these data and can't wait to share it with the community.
Oh, that's awesome. And congrats on your talk there. I wish I was going. I have a question related to what does this mean for spironolactone?
Right. Like, and how do you decide?
Right.
Yeah, that will be the sort of million-dollar question. And I hope that we will be able to share some perspective of how we can position finerenone in contemporary practice alongside other options. Importantly, that MRA-based meta-analysis will include all evidence for non-steroidal MRAs, that's finerenone, and the steroidal MRAs, including spironolactone and eplerenone. But importantly, all these are placebo-controlled trials. And as I started with, it's very difficult to compare across trials that were especially conducted in different eras with different background therapies, sometimes even different target populations. But that said, we do have some head-to-head evidence, including in phase two trials. There was a phase two trial called ARTS that compared directly finerenone against spironolactone. These were relatively lower doses, but this target population was high risk, patients with chronic heart failure with reduced EF and concomitant chronic kidney disease. And in that trial, finerenone had lower rates of hyperkalemia and worsening kidney function compared with spironolactone. So these are small early phase trials, but at least suggested that there was a safety advantage of finerenone. At the end of the day, I think we are left with Fine Arts heart failure will be the only definitive trial in this therapeutic area to show that an MRA is beneficial. We have two ongoing trials, both called SPIRIT-HF and SPIRIT-HFpEF, that are both studying spironolactone in the same target population of HFpEF. So I think we'll learn more about steroidal MRAs as well as non-steroidal MRAs. There are many ongoing trials of finerenone in various subpopulations of heart failure. So I think that this is an initial step forward. I've always tried to lean on evidence-based medicine to guide my own practice. And so when we do have a definitive trial, I often will try to replicate that in my own practice. However, of course, in reality, I think there's going to be situations that where there are financial or economic barriers to care that may limit that exact replication. And so I think then as clinicians, we will need to lean on what is more common sense that we would borrow and we would then adopt therapies that we believe should have the same effects in this target population. And I think spironolactone and eplerenone will enter that conversation.
Yeah, I'm really excited because now I guess we have someone with CKD, diabetes, heart failure. He would be more able to use spironolactone as opposed to wondering, oh, should we use spironolactone? And so it's very exciting. And I see that we're impacting guidelines in a couple years with all this out. And yeah, it's a really exciting.
This might be the best ESC ever. This might be the most exciting ESC meeting that there's been in a while. Is there something that you're most excited about? Like, are you leaning one way or the other? What are you thinking? What are your thoughts?
Oh, I'm very biased as in terms of being integrally involved with fine arts, and so I do agree. I think it's going to be a very, very exciting ESC Congress. There are many, many other trials that I think will define how we practice heart failure, and that is not just medical therapy options, but also there are exciting device and procedural advances that are being showcased at that meeting. So it is the world's largest cardiology stage, and so we're excited to meet friends and colleagues from around the world and share this science.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us. Before we let you go, we're wondering if you would share the information about your podcast. We understand you have a cardiology podcast, just like we have a diabetes podcast.
Oh, thank you. I didn't want to take up your airtime, but I appreciate the opportunity. We have, I co-host a podcast called Don't Miss a Beat with my dear friend, Dr. Steve Green from Duke University Clinical Research Institute. And this podcast really focuses on the latest in clinical trial science. We really try to deep dive into individual trials about some of the decision-making that went on during the course of the trial, and then also try to borrow expert opinions on and perspectives on how trials will be interpreted and ultimately adopted into clinical practice.
Awesome. So anyone listening, look for Don't Miss a Beat in all your podcast places. So again, thank you so much. And thanks everyone for tuning in, and we will call again soon.